Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, October 3rd, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for 20 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one that contain the audio of people when they've called in the show and actually been stepped through the worksheet process. So if you choose to listen to those even repeatedly, they can serve as a powerful tutorial for you to help you get maximum benefit from these tools in the shortest amount of time possible. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. It contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we help people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. And once you call that number on your phone, if you press 1 on the phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And we appreciate whenever anybody does that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. That intention is to be of service, and that's just so much easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. If you don't have access to call directly and or prefer not to, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you, we'll address it, through the on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And as I mentioned, that just makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. And that's our intro. I want to mention that, as I've mentioned several times recently on this show, I do the On Your Mind podcast for Journey's Dream, in which we're trying to help rewrite the narrative on mental health to one in which optimal health and well-being are possible and expected. And as a part of that, I had the honor of interviewing Roger McPhillan, who's a psychologist. He's a board-certified psychologist in cognitive behavioral work, and he has the podcast titled Radically Genuine. And in that podcast, he's banging the drum about how damaged and corrupted our system is for psychological and mental health, psychiatric and psychological health. And as I interviewed him, and I've sent out an email blast to the people that have signed up for the mindshiftersacademy.org email list, that as I interviewed him, we were talking about a number of things that are problematic in the system, including how we're being taught to view our emotions as symptoms of a disease state that needs the doctor to prescribe a medication to rectify, et cetera. And when I asked him if he knew about Robert Whittaker, he said, oh, yes, and I am due to interview him soon. Well, he has an hour and 38-minute, probably an hour and 20 without commercials and whatnot, interview that just posted with Robert Whittaker, and he titles it, he has clearly has more powerful marketing, he has money. He titles it Uncovering the Greatest Mental Health Fraud in American History with Robert Whittaker. And you can find that wherever you get your podcasts, and or you can follow him on Substack. And I just thought I would mention, right in line with what we were discussing when I interviewed Roger McPhillan, this fraudulent study which is being used all over the place by mainstream media to validate or justify the use of antidepressant medications, and it's a really good thing for us as consumers to know about that. This isn't to say that any individual who's taking medications needs to get off of them instantly, et cetera. This is not to say that all medications are bad by any means. This is just to talk about the lack of transparency and the research malfeasance and the motivation behind all of this, which is money and profit, rather than having the motive behind these systems be to help people and to usher in a healthier, happier life for those who are going for treatment. And so you can find that on the Radically Genuine podcast, or you can find Radically Genuine on Substack. And I highly recommend it. And and welcome your comments and feedback. Either through email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or at on the phone, 563-999-3581, and press 1 on your phone. The other topic that's very much on my mind this morning is this idea of boundaries and communication. And I just finished a session with a person where we're trying to help them understand that if I'm saying one thing and doing another, even if I don't understand how I'm doing it, what is getting communicated most effectively is what my actions are saying. And so my ongoing definition for boundaries is everything I say and do which effectively communicates to others what I believe is acceptable and not acceptable. It doesn't mean that what I think is acceptable is right and somebody else is wrong. It just means this is what's acceptable to me. Even if I can't get 100 other people to line up on my side and say this is acceptable and that's not acceptable, it doesn't matter. As long as I'm sticking with and I'm matching my words and my actions in alignment with what I feel is acceptable, my life situation will probably improve. It might require more work from me. It might, you know, cost me some money, and yet my overall satisfaction with my life will probably improve as I work to align my actions and my words to effectively communicate to the people around me what I think is acceptable and not acceptable. And so there are times when people say, well, what's an example of that? And I say, well, before we get to that, we have to get to the idea that people, when they like that definition of boundaries and they get all excited and they run off saying, I'm going to communicate to people what I think is acceptable and not acceptable. And I slow them down and I say, here's the part of that that is tougher and you're not going to like it so much. And that is everything that I say and do communicates to the people around me what I think is acceptable and not acceptable. So any inconsistency in my behavior to my words is going to send the message to people that I'm okay with things that I might have an intellectual assessment of and say, this is bad, this is abusive, I don't want this. But if I'm not really vigilant with my words and actions and making sure they're lined up in the same way, I might be sending the message to people that it's okay to do that to me or around me. An example might be if I'm at a party and I'm standing there in a group of people and somebody's telling racist jokes. And if I just kind of grimace and stand there and, you know, stare at my feet or sip my drink or try to change the topic to something else, my behavior is saying I'm okay with people telling racist jokes around me. If I say, hey, that's not right, and then I stay even though they continue with racist jokes, my behavior is saying I might say it's not okay, but my behavior is saying it's okay. So it's been a powerful tool in my life to help me create more peace, more of a life, an interaction with people that I prefer. And it is also important that I evaluate on a regular basis, is my behavior lining up with my thoughts and words? Am I in one way or another that might be a little subtle or insidious? Am I sending the message to people that it's okay that they yell at me or they don't pay back debts or that they say one thing and do another or that they're very negative? And if I stick around, it doesn't matter how much I might tell them, don't talk to me that way or I'm not going to put up with this. If I stay, I'm putting up with it. So I just had that conversation with a person again, reviewing that, and we were also talking about what happens when somebody does something that you think is significantly wrong. Well, as we talk about in this work, we encourage people to pardon the other person soon and often. Let them off the hook, because if I'm not going to let them off the hook, I'm going to be carrying the grudge. I'm going to be carrying the upset energy, and that anger and resentment and drive for vengeance is what's going to be eating away inside of me. They're not going to be hurt by that. I'm the one who's hurt by that. And then in this work, we advocate that people also do their forgiveness work, which means they actively work to remove the thoughts and perceptions within them that are generating the upset about what happened. If I do that, it doesn't necessarily mean that I trust that the other person won't do the same thing again. And so we talk about trust as separate from the process of pardoning and forgiveness. And for me, it doesn't make sense to trust somebody that they won't do a certain thing again if they've done something that I think is seriously wrong. It doesn't make any sense for me to trust they won't do it again unless they've done four things, unless four things have happened. The first thing is they apologize in a way that I feel is sincere. Because if they don't even think it was wrong, there's no reason to believe they won't do it again. So the first thing is they apologize in a way that I feel is sincere. The second thing is they acknowledge it was wrong. That's the first thing. The second thing is they make an apology that I feel is sincere. The third thing is they make amends in whatever way possible. If it was a public insult, they make a public apology. If they broke something of mine, they pay to have it repaired or replaced. If they've stood me up two or three times on a lunch date, they call and say, here's what happened. I'm terribly sorry. I'd like to meet with you. I'll come to you this time. I'll buy the lunch. I'll bring you your favorite, food or a new trinket for your office or something. They're taking active steps to try and make amends. And then the fourth thing, and to my thinking, these are all important, all equally important. And the fourth step is they make concrete changes in their life to try and ensure that this doesn't happen again. What might that look like? Well, if somebody's raging out at me and it's not the first time and I say this is not acceptable to me, then they get involved in an anger management class or book, and they work the workbook, and they take active steps to dismantle the pain, fear, or sadness in them that they're using their anger to hide from. If it's a situation that, has a significant logistics problem, they change the logistics. And if that doesn't happen, then it doesn't make any sense for me to trust they won't do it again. I can let them off the hook and pardon them and dismantle any thoughts I have about vengeance or bitterness. I can do my own internal reality management worksheets and forgiveness process of dismantling or clearing any upset that I have. And then stay clear of them. Or if they invite me to lunch again, just say, no thanks, I'm busy, or honestly tell them, no, I don't think I'm willing to do that because I've already been burned a couple times. So, we have to make other arrangements. Now, that four-step, set of requirements that I encourage people to use before they decide to trust somebody again who they think is seriously wrong them is also in the book by Dr. Henry Cloud titled Necessary Endings. And in that book, Necessary Endings, Dr. Cloud expands that those four steps into nine steps. But it's essentially the same wisdom. He and I probably have a number of the same primary source material that we are trained from or we've read, et cetera, that makes sense to us. And so there's a validation for this, and there's another place you can look at to get even more expounded upon in this area if you feel like that's not enough for you. So, getting centered here and just taking a breath and thinking, okay, where should we go next with this? Today's a Thursday, so there will be a support group tonight. All the information you would need to join us absolutely free is at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And we'd be happy to have you join us and or share that information with someone you think might be interested. And it's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And the more the merrier kind of thing. In the work we've been doing, if nobody raises a hand, I will get back to the books we've been reading with commentary. And take a look at the cross-pollination, I call it, of these books from Butterflies Are Free to Fly to Of Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery. But first, 314, is this Doug?
Yes, it is.
Welcome.
Hello.
Long time no hear from you.
Thank
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good. Well, what you were, I was first, my comment is that I thought yesterday's show was great. I listened to it after, as a recorded version, and I, every aspect of it really, and I'm grateful to Susan for initiating all that communication and for what you said before. And I was going to talk about that, but now I have an issue more directly related to my experience. I got back from traveling last night, and I am a letting, basically I have a house sitting arrangement with somebody in a small cabin that's near mine, that is half mine and half my sister's. And the gentleman there helps me around here and pays some money, not a lot, to be there, but it's helpful for me. And the goal for me is to create a mutually constructive and helpful situation. And one of the things that's a condition for being there is not to store a bunch of things on the property. And it seems like we constantly are, he tends to bring things there that aren't supposed to be there. And then I tell him, and then it just is an ongoing sort of situation. And it's what you were speaking about resonated that for me. It's like, I'm not sure how to deal with it. Last night I came home and there was in the carport where he knows, and we've communicated he's not supposed to store anything, there is a relaxing, one of those reclining chairs and a whole bunch of carpet squares, like about a 2 foot by, well, about a 4 foot by 6 foot by 5 foot high pile of them in there that they're all stacked neatly, but I have no use for those. I don't want them on the property. And they're there. So it doesn't serve me to be too aggressive he is helpful for me. It's helpful for me to have him there. The revenue is helpful. He helps me with certain projects on occasion as needed. I'm trying to create a mutually beneficial relationship. It helps him. But I'm frustrated with this situation. And what I did was I just wrote him a text.
Meaning, here, let me just interrupt you so we stay on track here.
Yep,
meaning,
please.
I'm generating frustration around this.
Exactly. Yes. Yes, I am. And I'm finding that I feel ineffective in getting my goals met, in being able to communicate and have him honor my request and follow the guidelines, which have been written out, clearly agreed to, signed. You know, these are the terms for house sitting here. You know, this is what I need. And it seems that there's this propensity to, you know, do things that I don't need, that I don't want done. Basically bringing things there, storing stuff, bringing in too much things, not, you know, expanding out of the boundaries of the room that he's, you know, staying in and putting things elsewhere all about, and are not keeping the place as clean as it's supposed to be, things like that. But mainly it's in this moment about this, bringing stuff into the carport, which we've discussed before. And I explain it, and he says, okay, and then next thing I know, something like this happens. I'm gone for 10 days, and then I come home, and here we have all this stuff here. And so I guess I'm looking for guidance around it. What I just wanted to mention that what I did was I sent him a text, and I said, I'd like you to tell me, to think about what you would say if the situation was reversed. You're me, I'm you. We've had all these communications. We've got this history. You come home and you find the trash can full of carpet, old carpet squares, so much so that it's so heavy. And it's trash night. It's not out on the curb. So I drug it out there and at 3 o'clock this morning. And then I find this in the carport. What would you think? What would you say to me? And what would you think, like, your emotions? How would you feel? Respected, disrespected, honored? Let me know that. I don't want to hear about your excuses or why you did it or, you know, why there was no communication about it first, but what would be your response? That's what I sent him. And I'm just interested in whatever counsel, guidance, or process or evaluation or, you know, awareness that you would point me to around this.
Well, the first thing that pops into my head is the idea of that, the art of nonviolent communication, written about by Micah Salaberrios, and formulating a communication on that template as an opening to get the discussion going further. And it's the kind of thing that you did in this last communication might evolve in a discussion that's trying to use that template, the nonviolent communication template, which is very much like Dr. Michael Rice's responsibility communication tool.
Okay. That one I'm familiar with, of course. I've heard of nonviolent communication, but I don't know this template.
Well, the template is available for like it's available for like $4 or $5 on Audible. It's it's just at an hour long audio file, so you can listen to it multiple times to get it down and to, you know, let the examples that he uses sink in, et cetera. And because it's so accessible, I tell people, if you have an Audible account, don't buy it with a credit, because credits cost $13 or $14 or $15, and this audio file is available for like $4 or $5.
What is the name of it again?
It's called The Art of Nonviolent Communication.
Okay. I'll do that. I have an account, and I'll do that.
And then, you know, then you can formulate a communication to him and see where that goes, as long as you're trying to use. And if he gets at all triggered or upset, then they recommend what Robert Bolton would call reflective listening, and in that work he calls it emergency empathy, and it's a very powerful tool to just, your focus is to give the other person the lived experience of being heard and understood, even if you don't agree with their position. And
okay.
So in combination with the nonviolent communication format, it's a very powerful set of tools.
And he mentions both of those things, sort of.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It's all
okay.
the emergency empathy is a big part of that
yeah.
1 hour audio that you'll listen to if you listen to it.
Okay.
And
that
then
sounds...
you know, the idea of you know, how would you feel? That's a good, you know, way to try and ask people to step into your shoes and have some empathy, et cetera. And if they're capable of doing that, that can be useful. But you don't know who you're dealing with, right? He may not be capable of stepping into your shoes. He might have it all rationalized that you're being unreasonable and he's being reasonable and here's why. And so the nonviolent communication bypasses all of that and just says, here's what I experience is happening as clearly as I can, without any judgment words, without any emotionally loaded words, just like Michael Rice's first step of his responsibility communication. And then here's the impact on me. Here's the emotion that I'm generating in response to this, and here's what's causing me to have to do, like you said, bring this out at 3 a.m, you know, heavy, et cetera, to take the trash out and extra time and energy on my part. And or I'm generating, you know, these emotions of fear about what if this keeps going and escalates and what if I can't stop this, then we'll, you know, ruin the friendship or I'll have to ask you to leave and I don't want to do that. So you can say those things. And then if it's relevant, you can ask, you can make a request. And he talks diligently in there about the difference between a request and a demand that's disguised as a request, et cetera, or manipulation that's disguised as a request, et cetera. And so if you put that together and the conversation that it comes out of that, then you start talking about, I'd like to ask your advice. Well, how do you think we can, this is similar to what Dr. Rice has in the responsibility communication tool, but instead of saying, how can we resolve this, how can I, if you have any ideas how I can dismantle my upset or keep from generating upset here, because I want to heal my upset. That's Dr. Michael Rice's responsibility communication tool. And because of that being the primary focus of his tool, it's not applicable for a lot of people in a situation like yours. But the responsibility communication tool can be. Right? I mean, you may not want to open up
yes.
your emotional life to this person and say, I need your help in dismantling my upset. It may not be that kind of a relationship.
Yeah, that's
and you might
probably
say,
true.
That's not really my goal in this. My goal is not for him to help me manage my emotions. My goal is to get a behavior change and or get comfortable with the way it is and manage it in a way where it doesn't escalate.
Right, that we can both cooperate and have success without happening that aren't working for me, something like that.
And,
yeah.
and the other thing is that, you know, just in general, when you're at a point like this, that this comes up and you'll mention it on the internet show, you clearly are generating negative emotional or states or tension around this. And so...
Yes.
I would be remiss if I didn't say the worksheets around this are going to be critically important for you.
Okay. Sure.
because it doesn't matter how many times you've said it or whether or not you're being clear or whether or not you're in the right. If you generate upset around it, that's what matters in that moment. Because as I was talking about yesterday, and we've talked about many times on this show before, when I have irritation or fear or sadness or hurt come up, it is a distorting filter over my perception. And then it limits the range of options and the number of options I'm going to be able to see that might be useful in helping resolve the situation. It distorts my perception to have a strong emotion active, and that's just like gravity on this planet. That's going to happen every time.
So I noticed, and I'm anxious to go listen to this audible, and I think maybe I should do a worksheet first. Would you think so?
I think it would be quite useful. I think it would be quite useful.
All right. Yeah, I think I need to do at least one because I do have upset about it. Okay.
Well, you have upset. It's not about this.
Oh, thank you.
Right? That's the
yeah,
critical
I have upset
feature,
in me, yeah.
Right?
Unhealed part,
because
right?
If your upset is about this, then it would be malpractice on my part to tell you to do a worksheet.
That puzzles me. That statement puzzles me.
Okay, well, let's just parse it out. If you had upset about this situation and I said, oh, turn inside and dismantle your upset, that doesn't do anything to correct the external situation. And if the external situation is the thing that's causing your upset, the only thing that makes sense is to me to come over there and help you beat this guy up or chase him out or give you a way to deal with him that we get him to change somehow. It would be malpractice for me to say focus inside yourself if the upset is about the external situation. If something or someone outside of you is causing your upset, the only thing that would be good practice for me is to help you change the outside world or the people around you.
Which it never is, right?
It never is
about the outside world. Okay.
Which is why the worksheets make sense, because it is an inside job.
It's also why that's such a strange concept to me, that it would be malpractice to recommend a worksheet because it's always appropriate to recommend a worksheet because it's always an inside job. I mean, if one's
exactly.
upset, disturbed. Okay.
Exactly. I'm trying to use the words and the concepts to help really shine a light on why we're not nitpicking. When we, I had a woman in my office earlier, and she said that she wanted to talk about a situation where her husband was raging at her. And I stopped. And I said, we can talk about that, but let's first clear up the language so we're describing it accurately. He was raging. He's not raging at you or about you. And what we know in this work is that if I have anger coming out of me, it means there's pain, fear, or sadness inside of me that I don't feel capable or willing to address internally. So if I think that I'm angry at somebody else, I'm way off the mark. If somebody else thinks I'm angry at them, they're off the mark. And no solutions, no lasting productive solutions can come from that because we're starting with a false premise. I'm not mad at another person. I'm not mad because they did this or that. I'm using the way I'm choosing to interpret that to resonate or generate upset in me. And, you know, to help you focus in on your worksheets, you might say, okay, so how am I generating upset about this? What am I making it mean? Am I making it mean he's not respecting me? Am I making it mean he's lying when he says he won't do it again? Am I making it mean I'm bad at communicating, and so I'm feeling sad that I haven't effectively communicated this? So when I assess accurately what I'm making it mean, now I get a more direct path to the most productive worksheets.
Will this be 1D?
Yes, the thought I'm using to generate the upset, right? Another way to talk about it is, what am I making this situation mean?
Okay. And I think it's, would it be appropriate to say something like, it means that, well, it has multiple meanings, so that's kind of hard to put in a...
Right, but then multiple worksheets.
Right. Oh,
For each level of meaning, it would be a different worksheet, because that level of meaning would be distilled down into a specific thought that would go in the worksheet on the one you're talking about, a seven-step worksheet. It's step 1D, as in my thoughts are the things that cause my emotions, and so the thought I'm using to create my upset here is X, Y, or Z.
Yes.
So if I have multiple meanings, I think he's disrespecting me, I think he thinks I'm a fool, I think he thinks I'm not smart enough to see what he's doing, that would be three different worksheets, because there's three different thoughts generating, and it might all be the same negative emotion. But when I set it up that way through my thought and what resonates with those thoughts, when I cancel the goal that's in line with that, it'll take me to a different part of my mind that holds upset. And, of course, the goal in this work is to clear out as much of that upset as I can so that I can perceive more accurately before I decide how to take next steps.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, I feel I've got the focus and the the information to launch.
Well, and you might, you know, use some time right now to start just talking out loud about, okay, so what else am I making it mean?
Well, one of the things is, I think he feels his needs, wants, justify his not keeping to the terms of the agreement. I feel that he feels that I'm unreasonable. I'm writing this down. I think that he disrespects me. I think he must think I'm a pushover.
All those are good. I hope you're writing some of these down.
I'm writing them down.
He disrespects me in my thoughts would be different than he thinks I'm a pushover. And so my thoughts would create very different, you know, goals and emotions around that. I don't know what yours are, but that's why I'm highlighting this. I'm saying, if I had the thought he's, you know, manipulating me or disrespecting me, that would generate a different set of thoughts and emotions in me and a different goal than he thinks I'm a pushover. So I'm encouraging you to use both of those rather than lump them together.
Yeah, because that is what it generates. It's like, you know, doesn't think that I have, he must, my mind is telling me that if he's doing that, he must think that.
He thinks I'm an idiot. That would be another one, right? That would be different than a pushover. He doesn't think I'm smart enough to see what he's doing here.
I don't know. I mean, it's so obvious. I mean, he can't think I won't see it. So he knows I'll come and I'll see that, you know, and
How about he thinks I'm too weak to stand up to him? It might be similar to the pushover business.
That's very similar. I honestly think that he thinks that he's justified in that you know, he should have. I think that he thinks his needs are more important than the rules, That's what I started with, and I think that's probably, you know, I think he feels that if the rules don't meet his needs, then he's justified in not following them, because he's, you know, he has expressed to me things like he feels like he's living in somebody else's house while he is, you know, and that he's frustrated. I know that, you know, he has his own level of pain about other things, like the very fact that he's in this situation, that he needs to be engaged in this arrangement because he would like to have his own house that he owns and can do anything he wants in. You know, he's frustrated that at his age he doesn't own his own property. He's voiced that to me. So I know that those are underlying frustrations that are, you know, pain points in his self-judgment, you know, that it's a problem because he doesn't already own a house or something. That he would, so then I think that somehow that plays out in, well, I'm just going to do what I want here. You know, I'm not going to, it's not that he does that totally, but that he does it to this degree, whatever, to the degree that it's happening, you know, it's like I'm sure he's trying to respect my wishes somewhat too, and I appreciate that, but I'm just frustrated that as many times as we talk about these things, so I have frustration in me coming up because, and this is a trigger.
Not because, but I'm generating frustration over my experience that we keep talking about it without resolution.
I'm not
frustrated because of that. I'm generating frustration when I recognize that we've talked about this numerous times without resolution. And what is really useful to understand is that that frustration that I'm generating has not contributed to a productive resolution. So I want to first dismantle the frustration because it's been there from the beginning. If it was useful in resolving this, I'd say, you know, keep it up. Do more of it.
I'm writing down that I'm generating frustration when I recognize that we've talked about this without resolution. Because that really is...
Has there ever been a time really, in your life where you've had a conflict with somebody and you've talked about it a long time without resolution? Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And have you ever generated frustration about that before? Ding, ding, ding. And did it help you move instantly to a clear, smooth understanding and resolution of the issue? No.
It didn't help at all.
And so, you know, the primary benefit of work like this is to understand my frustration really isn't about this outside situation or this person. My frustration is a response within me that these are resonating old trauma energy or old stuck beliefs, negative beliefs about myself. And if I don't dismantle that first, I severely limit the probability that I'll get resolution that's productive and constructive.
Yes. So there's a worksheet then on like I could do a worksheet on just my frustration. Just that. I mean,
absolutely.
I have frustration. The object of my worksheet would be my frustration, right? Yeah, cuz to sort out where that comes from.
How does being frustrated look like the rest of my life?
And of course, I think I can identify that some part of me thinks frustration is a tool for resolution. I mean, I mean, some insane part of me because it was always used as a tool to try and get resolution, to try and modify my behavior. You know, it's like my parents or, you know, other power people, you know, would express frustration and or anger or rage to try and modify my behavior. So some part of me goes, oh, that's how you get somebody to behave. You know, you express frustration, you know, or anger or whatever. And I know that's not constructive or helpful or real communication or effective in, I mean, intellectually, I know that. You know, you might obtain short-term behavior modification, but in the end, you're both destroying yourself and your relationship. So it doesn't mean it's not in me, though. It's an interesting disconnect, you know, like where I know something intellectually, but clearly it's in my biology differently, you know.
Right, and so unless I can do what's recommended in this work, which is to pour more of my mind energy moment to moment, day in and day out, into monitoring my internal state and moving closer and closer to taking 100% responsibility for it. So as soon as I go from that internal peace state to any kind of an upset, I take that calming breath, I turn the focus inside myself, and I start asking questions about what's going on in me that's creating this. Right? What am I making this situation mean, or how am I generating this tension or upset? And if I keep my focus in there until that's resolved, until I've dismantled it, use some tools, the EFT tapping, the Havening, the butterfly tapping, the Michael Rice worksheet, the four or five step mental reality management worksheet that I make available on the mindshiftersacademy.org website, unless I get into one of the use of those tools and get out of the part of my mind that's been programmed to think this upset in me is caused by this situation outside of me, I don't have any hope for resolution. I've got to turn inside to where the source of the upset is generated. And that's a habit I have to practice, right? It's a behavior that I have to start practicing and hopefully stick with it enough for it to become a habit. And once it's established as a habit and I start to see, if I start to see that it is useful, then I've got to pour more energy into it and try and work to make it a default habit, first nature kind of a response.
Right. I really do want a constructive relationship. My goal is not to. My goal is to have a constructive relationship and where we both get what we need and are able to be helpful to one another. So, not make my need for this, that, or the other thing more important to her. Okay. Last thing is, I'm sure I can find it on my own, but is there a specific person, place, or website that you would, I feel like maybe I should try and incorporate a little of the EFT tapping, and I'm not that, I mean, actually, I'll just use, you know what, I've got somewhere a piece of paper where you wrote that down.
Well, just go to YouTube and type in Brad Yates. He's let me interview him a couple times. He's very solid. When people watch that interview, if they've been to the class that I used to teach on it, they say, oh my gosh, he's just like you. And the reason is because we both stay very close to the guy that created it, Gary Craig. So if you go to Brad Yates on YouTube or go to tappingwithbrad.com, his website, if you go to YouTube and Brad Yates and say how to tap, you'll get a 5 to 7 minute video on how to tap, and then you can go there and type in frustration, anger, back pain, sleep problems, and he's got videos on all that. So you can pull up a 7 to 9 minute video or 5 minute video with him tapping on a particular issue and just watch it while you tap along with him, and it's like having your own coach.
That sounds great. And that's on YouTube.
Go to YouTube and
it's Yates Yates.
Correct. Yeah. Yates Yates. Tapping with Brad or Brad Yates on YouTube.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Tim. I feel like I have a whole quiver full of actions to take for my progress.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. I hope that I hope it works out for you. And if you got the bandwidth for it, call back in a day or two or a week or two and let us know how it's resolving for you.
Okay. Thanks. Okay.
You're entirely welcome and deserving. I'll mute you so you can listen to the second hour. We're down to our last 3 minutes. I don't see Jeannie on the call yet. I will check with my phone to make sure I haven't missed a message from her about them being on live today. I would expect them to be live today unless I hear something from them. And again, I'll just mention that there's a support group happening tonight that's absolutely free. If you're interested in joining or you know somebody who is, have them go to the mindshiftersacademy.org website and check out the link for the Thursday group. And click that link and load up the Zoom app and join us for the call. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. I will turn on the microphone for and welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you, and thanks for covering for me yesterday.
You sound like the crud is still with you, so.
It is, but I went to the doctor yesterday, and you see, he said that other than seeing drainage in my throat, that he couldn't see anything else wrong and that my lungs were clear. So I mainly wanted to make sure that I wasn't contagious before we joined Ryan and Gabby Saturday. Didn't want to
All
get
right,
anything
well,
to them.
Heal well and quickly, and have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So we'll give Michael just a minute to dial in. And hold on, I'm going to copy it. Sorry about that. So we both have had the crud for about 10 days. Well, actually, mine's about 13 days. Michael's about 15 days. But we are getting out to the other side, even though it still sounds terrible. And we thank everybody for your support and for thinking of us. And I see Doug's hand is up. I don't know if he was from Dr. Tim. I'm going to turn him on. Hey, Doug, how are you?
Hi. Sorry, you're not feeling well. it sounds like it's a challenge there. I had talked to Dr. Tim. I have a whole handful of things to do now. So, yeah.
Okay.
Other than just hope
very
you
good.
Get well soon. Hope
Thank
you.
You.
Get well.
Thanks.
Recover quickly.
Okay. Thank you. So we did have a good visit with, we spent 3 days with Krista and a week with, 10 days with Michael J. because he was up there when we were visiting Krista in St. Louis. And then we went to Branson. And so Michael and I had this coughing and hoarseness and garbage going on the whole time. It was a 13-hour and 40-minute drive back. We made it one day, unloaded the U-Haul truck. Yesterday, we had a couple of helpers come, and so that expedited things. And we got it all unloaded. Most of it's put up. We went to a storage unit and emptied it out and then loaded it back up. So we've been busy since we've been back. And then, like I said, I wanted to just make sure I was clear because we're joining Ryan and Gabby in Outer Banks from Saturday to Saturday. We will be live all next week, Lord willing. And we have a saying here in the South, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. We hope the creek doesn't rise anymore. It's crazy that this area got hit so hard by the hurricane, and we're like 300 and some miles from the nearest coast. But we've got a lot of devastation within an hour radius of us, but our place is fine. We didn't lose any trees. Some of our neighbors did. And so we're glad to be back and get things settled and some tomatoes picked and stuff like that. And getting things kind of settled and repacked again to go again. Anyway, so Michael is still not showing up on the switchboard, but I believe he dialed in. Let me check here. And so our call-in number, and welcome to the second hour. I didn't even say that. Today's Thursday, October 3rd, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I know we had a couple of people said that they were possibly going to call in. I don't see their numbers on the switchboard yet, so hopefully they'll get in here. And Michael's with us now, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here. Excited that we get back to doing the show. We missed 2 days last week. It was an intense time and rocked on well.
Michael, I can hear you talking through the wall, but I can't hear you on the switchboard.
Well, let me see.
I'm not sure what's going on there. Do you have your mute button on?
Is that any better? Is that any better, Jeannie? Hello? If you can hear me? Okay. Well, Miss Jeannie tells me that she's been disconnected. If you can hear me and you've got my phone number, if you wouldn't mind sending me a text saying, yep, we can hear you, Michael. Other than that, I was going to suggest to Jeannie that she might want to drop that part of the conversation about the creek don't rise because bless the people, I mean, south of here, we're just on the north side of some of the most unimaginable tragedy that I've ever, you know, been close to or witnessed. It's just unbelievable. I can't fathom how many people, you know, especially a lot of these communities out in the okay.
Well, we'll try it again. Everybody dropped off. I did get a text that Susan got disconnected, and she can't get dialed back in. So let's see if it's going to let us do this time.